into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now then, you're welcome along. It's a busy football show for you this evening. Amber Barrett was part of a disappointing night in Kiev on Friday. She's going to join us from her home club in Cologne towards the end of the football show this evening. Latest in the Champions Leagues, second half's just getting underway, but half-time still. Liverpool 0, FC Midtjylland of Denmark 0 at Anfield. Man City 1-0 up away to Marseille. Real Madrid 1-0 down to Borussia Mönchengladbach. And Atletico have equalised against Salzburg. This evening, earlier on, Bayern Munich 2-1 winners away to Moscow, and Inter drew 0-0 with Shakhtar Donetsk. Porto are 1-0 up on Olympiacos. That is where we are. I'll keep you up to date on that League of Ireland Division 1 situation as well across the next 45 minutes or so. Happy to say John Bruin is with us in the meantime. Evening, John.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Very well. I do want to talk to you about Marcus Rashford and the amazing week he has had, but some breaking news from Barcelona. I'm sure you may have seen this as well. So the Barcelona president, Josep Maria Bartomeu, and the entire board have resigned, which may not come as a huge surprise to anybody. You take on Messi, generally, I would suspect, at Barcelona. If you don't win that fight, it's going to end one way. So he's opted to leave rather than ask club members to vote on his future. I'll bet he has. That's not a losing margin he wants to see. In raw figures. So over 20,000 supporters signed a petition this month asking for him to be removed. Piqué had described the amount of money the board has spent on players as an atrocity. In April, 6 board members resigned at the running of the club. We know all about the Messi situation. No surprise, really.
Well, none whatsoever. It's been coming a while. He certainly didn't seem like he was going to last until the next election, and he was going to lose that election. But anyway, once Messi stayed, and that was a fairly, messy situation, wasn't it? Bartomeu was on his way out. Now, the interesting thing there, just reading about it, is that his payoff appeared to be that he said that he'd agreed that Barcelona would join a European Super League and then just left it there. So back we go to the Super League narrative. Let's see what comes of that. I mean, I suppose there's a big difference between signing a deal and actually getting it done with, as regards La Liga and all the rest of it. But ructions at that club, you've got to say that there's a club that have frittered away. It feels strange to say this, but they frittered away the career of the best player of all time. It always feels to me, okay, Barcelona have been serial champions in La Liga, but they should have won more European Cups with Lionel Messi in the team, and that's not happened. Mm. And that's a lot of that's to do with the transfer policy of that club. There are several white elephants floating around Catalonia. Antoine Griezmann would be one. Dembele would be another. You've also got Philippe Coutinho who's back at the club this season. I mean, so those players, each costing around 100 million euros, all of them misfits. And ultimately, the team which did win the European Cup, the Champions League, back in 2015 and before that, the best players in Barcelona's team are still those players from that era, Piqué, Busquets and Messi, of course. So a shambles, he had to go. Seems like he's been there for too long to me.
Yeah, it's a lesson in how to spend or how not to spend a billion euro over the last 5 years. I only hope the European Super League, by the way, will be more exciting than all this talk about the European Super League.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is about this, it seems to flow. I mean, listen, it's about money. We know that. It's been floating since the 98-99 season. There was this company called Media Partners, which forced UEFA's hand and forced them to make the Champions League into a bigger competition. We've had various iterations of it floated, and the latest one appeared to be affiliated to FIFA, with Manchester United, Liverpool, as always, towards the front of that. Though the signs out of Manchester United in particular were that they didn't want to be associated with this just at this point. And I suppose the one thing is that Bartomeu has done a fairly rare thing, which is to come out and say that their club are for it. Because I tell you one thing, I suppose if you're unpopular with fans and you're on your way out, then joining a Super League is probably about the most unpopular thing you could probably do. Mm. Because the fans of clubs, the fans that actually go to matches, I would say 95% against the Super League.
Marcus Rashford.
Yes.
It's quite extraordinary, really. So there's a kind of a controversy, you know, around him today. Yeah. To what extent, I don't know. So it seems Marcus Rashford, who is the, by a distance in all the polls and with the bookies, the favourite to win BBC Sports Personality of the Year, it seems he won't be on the shortlist.
He won't be on it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Joe, I'm going to say this. Sports Personality of the Year is the biggest waste of time, perhaps, in British TV. And I don't know how much British TV you watch, but there's a lot of waste of time involved. I mean, it was good in the old days when David Coleman and Steve Ryder presented it and you're able to catch up on the year just gone. But these days, it's a sham of an event. And listen, we all know the Sports Personality of the Year, if such a thing matters, is Marcus Rashford, because that word personality. Now, he's a 22-year-old guy from Manchester. He's from very humble beginnings, which is at the root of what he's pushing for. And he has made a huge impression on, well, essentially the well-being of the nation, and continues to do so, and continues to do so in an adult fashion beyond the politicians in this country. And so, you know, who else could there be? Okay, Lewis Hamilton is someone that I've seen mentioned because he is a, you know, he's beaten Michael Schumacher's record. He's probably going to win his seventh F1 title. But, you know, Lewis Hamilton will probably win another world title and can win it another year. Marcus Rashford is the man, not just sport, the man of 2020, which has been a desperate year. And he's been a shining light for this country.
Yeah, he sure has. I mean, I doubt he gives a you-know-what about the BBC Sports Personality of the Year Award. I woke up today to Piers Morgan and Gary Lineker bickering about it on Twitter, which, by the way, is not a great way to start your day, and that's on me.
That's
why it's in my head. So Rashford, I mean, I remember a couple of months ago, this all came to the fore initially, because effectively he forced a complete U-turn on the government's part within the space of 24 hours on this issue, the issue of feeding school children who need it. And that just doesn't happen, you know, that kind of a U-turn. And so a couple of months on, it seems that he has turned his attention to the fact that over the upcoming midterm, those same children won't be fed. There was no about turn on the government's part this time around. It seems to have been quite toxic. So am I right in saying basically over the course of the past week, in the midst of scoring that brilliant goal in Paris and the Chelsea game, he effectively harnessed the goodwill of companies and businesses all around the UK who were volunteering to feed children who might need the food over midterms. You know, everything from small restaurants saying children eat free here to other businesses who were donating plans. His Twitter feed was the epicentre of that movement. Is that basically what's happened?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the Friday, wasn't it?
When
the feed was just pumping out business after business. And let's face it, local businesses have been under the pump, haven't they? Especially in this time, and just doing the work that the government have refused to do. I don't know if you remember the Big Society, Joe. That was David Cameron's big idea 10 years ago for this country, which was to replace the welfare state and the central state looking after people. That society would look after each other, and that local companies would look after local people. It's actually some sort of weird Victorian idea of charity that he was trying to dredge up. But in the absence of the Conservative Party, Boris Johnson's government meeting Marcus Rashford's request to feed starving children at a time of deep recession, those companies have stepped in, and Marcus Rashford has done a great job. And he's done it, as I say, as an adult. You've had various politicians who presumably messages from Conservative Central HQ have been asking for to sort of pick at the idea of kids being given free meals. You've had various accounts, let's say, of a right-wing hue talking about how you can knock up a meal for 30p with an egg and make an omelette with tomatoes and, you know, some shin, beef shin or whatever. I mean, Twitter, as you said, Joe, it's probably not a place to go if you're not feeling good about yourself. Marcus Rashford briefly made it that way. Unfortunately, the way things are, something of a culture war has sprung up about this affair. But meanwhile, Marcus Rashford himself and the people behind him, let's state this, that there is some cynicism about Marcus Rashford in the fact that it is said he is that he can't be doing this himself. And it's clear and it's obvious, and those in the know will tell you that he is working with people that know what they're doing. But from another point of view, speaking to someone who does know quite a bit about this, is that Rashford himself is driving this project on. He is at the centre of it. It's something that he's really passionate about, that he gives his spare time to. And, you know, let's put it this way. An opposition party campaigning for this is going to get nowhere with the Conservative Party or the government, whoever that might be. But he has managed to raise himself above politics in this country, including to the point where various Tory MPs were receiving abusive messages, and he asked people to calm down. And as I said, he's the adult in the room, an outstanding young man. It makes me feel an old man to call him a young man, but that's exactly what he is. And as I say, forget the sporting personality of the year, he is the personality of the year.
Yes, I did see him actually going on Twitter to ask people not to abuse those Tory MPs and their families. He said, "Believe me, as a Premier League player, I know all too well what it feels like, and it's unnecessary," and he called for collaboration and togetherness. So he has certainly managed to stay above the politics here. I saw Sean Ingle was writing about it. He was making the point, similar to what we've just talked about, that Rashford has been able to carry people on all sides with him. So he says, "It was noticeable when he thanked Leeds United players for donating 25,000 to the school meals campaign. Many Leeds fans responded by returning the compliment. Whisper it, but he might be the first United player in living memory to be applauded at Elland Road if fans are back anytime soon." And I suspect he would be applauded at every single ground he might play at. Because, I mean, you wouldn't think there'd be any division over the issue of let's feed children who can't. I was going to say feed themselves or be fed by their family. You just wouldn't think that's the divisive issue here, that politics will be split down at the moment. So can you explain to me, not that poverty isn't a part of every country, and, you know, we have families here who cannot feed themselves, and we have organisations like St. Vincent de Paul, for instance. The concept of a food bank, is that a decades-old thing? In England, is that a relatively new thing? Like, you talk about David Cameron and big society as opposed to the welfare state. Like, have food banks been around forever? That culture I'm not as familiar with, John.
I mean, I couldn't call myself a historian of the food bank, but certainly the idea of the food bank in the last 10 years has become extremely prevalent. And let's say that a few clubs and a few fans of clubs have been collecting for food banks over that time. In Chelsea, a club that you would probably associate with a particularly well-heeled group of fans, certainly had a food bank running for quite a few years. It's this idea that that society comes in and helps because of the shortfall, and because we, a bit like you, have had this austerity politics and families feeding large families or feeding even a small family is very difficult on the benefits that you would receive from the government if you're unemployed or you are low paid. And so, there's been a big change in this country that came after 2010. Ostensibly, it was to pay for the money that was supposedly lost, well, the money that was lost during the economic crash of 2008 and the recession that followed that. But it was an ideological thing, as I said, by the Conservative Party at that time that felt that society should help out the poorest, and that people on benefits were people who would be better served by being forced out to work on labour. And it's, I'm sure, all concepts that I'm sure you're familiar with. But yes, this idea of food banks has been around, but Marcus Rashford's push for this has certainly moved above and beyond that. Now, I mean, actually today there's been the story that Mesut Ozil, who I was talking to you about last week, he's donating money and to local kids. He lives up in Barnet, North London, to local kids. And I think one of the good things is that Marcus Rashford is probably going to be a trendsetter in football. Now, if you recall, at the start of the pandemic, or the pandemic's forcing of a lockdown on this country, Conservative MPs, particularly Matt Hancock, let's call him the beleaguered health secretary of this country, was calling on Premier League footballers to take a wage cut and put money back in. Well, Marcus Rashford has led the way there. And at the end of it, Premier League footballers have stepped up with Rashford at the front of that. And at the time, that felt like an attack on, essentially, footballers are people from working class backgrounds like Marcus Rashford. And it felt like an attack on that type of person by the Conservative Party, rather than attacking, let's say, people that work in banks or senior managers at banks. I think the thing you could state from this is that class and poverty are issues that certainly in my time as an adult have never been quite so prevalent as they are now. And again, we come back to that figure of Marcus Rashford, a lightning rod for it, almost like an innocence at the heart of it. And someone that's driven on the debate. And what will come at a certain point is a Conservative Party U-turn, because they're probably going to have to come to a decision on this. But then again, we are used to U-turns in this country as well.
Yeah. On the football pitch then, over the last couple of days, we had a bank holiday here yesterday, so we didn't quite dig into the weekend that was. It was an okay-ish weekend. I mean, anyone who watched the Man United-Chelsea game won't get that 90 minutes back again. They did get Patrice Evra and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink having a hilariously entertaining conversation. High points being Evra pointing to the stitches on his shin and telling Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink that he hadn't forgotten that Jimmy had done that. But did we win that game and did I play on? Yes. And then going back to the conversation they were having. The gist of which seemed to be Evra not impressed at all, particularly United at home, playing with such caution and fear. And even Chelsea too, and Jimmy Floyd playing the part of more understanding parent and saying he could understand why both teams were playing it cautiously.
Yes, well, Sky seems to have hit on a duo there, don't they? I can see that one being brought back again. It was absolutely fantastic entertainment. As you say, the game itself, utterly forgettable, apart from Harry Maguire's wrestling on Aspilicueta. And a match that, I mean, what you had there is two teams that Rafa Honigsteiner, our friend, mm-hmm. calls that thing a broken team, mm-hmm. in which the bits of the team don't fit together, mm. and that's what Chelsea've got in the fact that Frank Lampard has decided to work on his defence, and he got it right. Thiago Silva actually had a very, very good game, but that meant that his strikers, Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, are neglected almost, and they, both of them, disappeared from that match. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's position is and problem is much the same. It was relying on actually Marcus Rashford again to pull off some kind of miracle, which he didn't quite manage to do. And one of the reasons for that is that Chelsea actually have a goalkeeper now, Edouard Mendy, who made two, let's call them regulation saves, because you'd expect a goalkeeper to make them. But when Kepa's been around, that has not been a guarantee by any means.
John, one of the interesting talking points now around Manchester United is, can Pogba and Fernandes play in the same team? And initially, when Fernandes had joined, the opposite seemed to be the case. We were talking about how Pogba had found someone and these two were going to, you know, really strike up a partnership. So, for instance, Monday Night Football last night, Gary Neville was arguing Pogba and Fernandes could play in the same team if Solskjaer played them like De Bruyne and Silva at Man City. Here was Carragher's response to that.
The players you're talking about, they haven't got that discipline. They haven't got it. I think if Matic or Fred's in that position, he looks up. Fernandes could be on the wing. Pogba could be in the centre-forward position. This is not me just saying it on the back of since Fernandes has come in. The first time I analysed Paul Pogba, 4 years ago, I think it was, in Manchester derby, and he was playing centre midfield. And we'd done it on the show. He was standing on the left wing for goal kicks. It was just... And I said on that show, I can't understand how a world-class talent or someone who's been bought for that much money, you think is going to come in, doesn't understand where he needs to be off a goal kick. I mean, you've just said Pogba's a great player. I'd actually say he's a great talent. Unbelievable talent. I don't think there's possibly anything he can't do in some ways. But a great talent, for me, doesn't always make a great player. I don't think his understanding of the game is amazing. And that, for me, defines... someone a great player, and that's why I'd always say Pogba's a great talent rather than a great player.
Is there anywhere else on the pitch you could get him in then, rather than in the midfield? Could you play him in one of the attacking positions?
No, I think he has played. They played wide left, didn't he?
If you wanted to get him and Fernandes in the same side,
in a fourth for Juventus, he played on the left and did that regularly for a number of years and was successful with it. I find it really difficult to understand how a player who's played at Juventus in a brilliant team, who's won many titles, then goes on to play in a brilliant French team in a World Cup and wins a World Cup. And he's a star in that team, can't be regarded as a great player. I don't think Manchester United have been a great team in this last few years. I don't think Paul Pogba's played brilliantly for Manchester United. But the idea that he can't be a great player because, you know, he lacks a little bit of discipline.
De Bruyne and Silva, after 4 years, we're still debating what his position is.
But to be honest, if you said to me De Bruyne would turn into what he's turned into under Pep Guardiola, I said, no chance. There's no way he can be as good defensively as he is in an attacking sense, which is what he's done. His transition from attack to defence is unbelievable now under Pep Guardiola. It never was before he got there. He was more of a sort of, he was a massive luxury player in the sense that he was a brilliant player, De Bruyne, before Pep Guardiola got to Manchester City, but on the ball, not off the ball. He was coached, he was moved into a position that then he made his own. So I don't sort of give up hope that Matic, Pogba, Fernandes can't play together in that three. There's going to come a point whereby the burden of having Paul Pogba on your shoulder is going to sort of shine brightly on Ole, and he's going to have to get him into the team at some point alongside Fernandes, like he did post-lockdown, whereby they did well together, they had some good results. I think it can happen again. I don't share your pessimism about him.
How, after 4 years at Manchester United, are we still talking about finding his best position, and can Ole get more out of him? Can he add this discipline to his game? He's been there 4 years.
John Bruin, are you Jamie Carragher? Or are you Gary Neville?
I am more of Jamie Carragher, definitely. It's interesting, actually, that Jamie Carragher to the talks there about a player who's a great player. He can't be a great player without knowing his best position. Now, who's the footballer that you most associate Jamie Carragher with, the player that he was closest to? That was Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard, before Liverpool fans get excited, was a brilliant player, and it has to be said, a much better player than Paul Pogba has been so far, or particularly in the Premier League. He hasn't won a World Cup, but it's that idea that you play it, you can never. It's that idea of discipline, isn't it? And
which he showed in the World Cup for France, ironically.
He did, and obviously Didier Deschamps managed to work on that, but. Okay, under the managers that clearly his relationship with Jose Mourinho was not great after that first season together. I do wonder how much, let's not call it respect, but how much he listens to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, or how much Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is able to convey to a player like to Paul Pogba. I've nearly called him Paul Scholes, if only. But I am reminded of the relationship that, say, Gerrard had with Rafa Benitez, in which they never really seemed to hit it off, did they? But although Gerrard played some fantastic football for him, but he would be put all over the team. Mm. And eventually he was put off Fernando Torres because Benitez didn't want him to get embedded in midfield because he thought his lack of discipline would cause problems there. Mm. Gerrard was a good enough player to carry that off. Is Paul Pogba a good enough player to move forward? Well, actually, you'd say that Manchester United have got some pretty good forwards and there isn't really a place for him there. The man in possession of the creative role is Bruno Fernandes. He's the guy that's putting performances together. He's scoring goals, okay, mostly from the penalty spot. But he's also, at the same time, showing leadership as well. It's noticeable that he's getting to wear the captain's armband. The Pogba thing, it hasn't worked out. I'm of Carragher's opinion that after 4 or 5 years, we should have seen quite a lot more from him. And they're going to have to find somewhere for him to go at some point. And I really don't know who that's going to be. Mm. That's something that's going to have to shake out. I think his contract's till 2022. Let's see what happens.
John Bruin, as ever, pleasure. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Joe. Good to talk.
See ya.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunluie.net.
Now, you're welcome back. I'm sure lots of you were watching on Friday night. It was ultimately a very disappointing evening for the Irish football team in Kiev. They lost 1-0 to Ukraine. And with regard to European qualification, left Ireland behind the eighth ball. Ireland have one game left. That's against Germany on December 1st. Ukraine have Greece and Montenegro. They played Greece this evening. They won 4-0. And Montenegro have lost all seven games. So we can presume that Ireland are going to have to pull off something extraordinary and special against Germany on December 1st. Amber Barrett joins us. Amber, how you doing?
Hi, lads. Good to see you.
No, thanks for joining us. I presume you're back in Cologne at this stage, are you?
Yeah, we got back on Saturday evening.
So the news this evening, not entirely unexpected, you were looking for Greece to do you a favour against Ukraine, isn't as we would have wanted. Ukraine have won 4-0. The disappointment of Friday, I suspect, is still with you in a big day, in a big way, rather.
Yeah, I suppose there was a few Hail Marys said this morning, hoping that Greece could have done us a wee favour today. But, you know, just even this morning, still getting out of bed, you still have that just feeling in the pit of your stomach that just really, really disappointing. And unfortunately, we look at Friday and it was a huge opportunity missed. I think considering we only needed a point going into the game to get into the playoffs. And just now we leave ourselves in a position where, as you said, you know, there's a good chance that Ukraine will beat Montenegro on the final day. So we need to get a result against Germany. And as Ivan says, stranger things have happened. But of course, very disappointing after Friday's result.
Yeah, I can well imagine. And not least because of the buzz that's around the team at the moment and the games have been in TV and so much good work has been done in this campaign.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I suppose when you're being a little bit critical now and reflecting on it a little bit, the game away to Greece where we concede in the 92nd minute is a game that we really, really shouldn't have dropped any points there. And, you know, even watching the first half of Greece and Ukraine today, I'm still, you know, still kind of baffled that we did manage to drop points against them. But unfortunately for us, that was something that happened. And, you know, the results after that were quite good. We went away then to, we beat Greece at home, beat Montenegro away. Of course, the most recent camp, Germany, was, of course, a very difficult game for us. But then, you know, coming into the Ukraine game, we're still in a very good position. And like you said, things have went for us in this campaign very well. And, you know, we're kind of sitting looking and I suppose nearly baffled at this stage that we're in the position we are. But, you know, there's still a game left for us and there's still a huge opportunity for us to do very well.
You were on the bench on Friday, Amber. What did you make of the game as it transpired?
To be honest with you, you know, after the goal went in and I suppose Katie missing the penalty, if I'm being really honest, there was a little bit of, I suppose, doubt kind of crept into my own head. I was still very confident of the girls playing and, you know, the players that we have, that we can always get something out of it. But I just felt it even in the first half and early in the second half, there was a couple of balls that just didn't drop for us in the right way. Or, you know, Rihanna's effort in the first half had just trickled towards the line, where another game, that's one of those, just rolls into the back of the net. And it was very difficult for the girls. You could see the effort to everybody run themselves into the ground. And it was just, you know, we could, I'm absolutely convinced if we play Ukraine another 9 times between now and, you know, over the next couple of weeks, we'd beat them every single time. So it's just one of those games that just, it just didn't fall for us. And unfortunately for us, they managed to score the goal, or we managed to score the goal for them, which I think even made it, you know, a little bit worse as well.
Yes, Ireland dominated the ball for huge spells. You mentioned Katie McKay's penalty. And then, I mean, the goal is just so awful. That does give you, I suspect, a thought in your head, geez, is this going to be, maybe this isn't our night. You know, like it did take on that quality as the game transpired, but you just felt, geez, Ireland can't dominate this much and not get some chance towards the end. And I don't know, like, what can you say afterwards? What could you do differently, really? It's not like you can turn around to Anya O'Gorman or Courtney Brosnan or Katie McCabe and, you know, say something as obvious as don't do that the next time.
Exactly. And, you know, again, if Katie hits that penalty again, I know, I have no doubt about it, she'd put it in the back of the net. And it's, as you said, like, when I say that, you know, I had a little bit of doubt, it wasn't, you know, again, doubting the players. It was just doubting as in, oh, God, is it going to be one of those games that we get stuck into now? And that is exactly what it transpired out to be. And unfortunately for us, we just ended up on the wrong side of it, you know. And if you had said to us before the game, you'll score an own goal, you'll miss a penalty, you know, we would have laughed at that, because it just wouldn't have happened. But I suppose now the most important thing is for the likes of Courtney and Anya and, of course, Katie as well. And they already know this, but it's how now they react to that disappointment as well personally. Because, you know, I think out of everybody, the three of them really took it very, very hard on Friday. And, you know, these things happen. You know, there's other players on the pitch that have, you know, they needed to take the responsibility as well. But unfortunately for the girls, it was those little mistakes that did cost us in the end.
I would imagine they were inconsolable in the dressing room.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like yourself, what do you say to them? Mm. Oh, better luck next time, or, you know, you'll be back. And, like, these things are great, but at that moment in time, that's not what the players wanted to hear. To see how close it was, and, you know, if Katie misses the penalty but we score and it goes to 1-1, like, you know, all the little mistakes are forgotten about. It's just, unfortunately for us, they were the mistakes that did cost us the game in the end.
You mentioned Greece away. From memory, you scored a brilliant goal that day. You were on the bench until the 86th minute Friday. You've been in very good form for Cologne. Lots of people felt you should have got on earlier. 4 minutes plus out of time isn't very much time to make an impact. So I've no doubt you have your own frustrations from the night as well.
Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, it's when Vera picks the team and, you know, you have Rihanna Jarrett, who's an excellent striker, goes out and starts it. You know, I have full confidence in her that she's going to be, if she gets the ball in the right areas, that she's going to cause the opposition problems. And she's always thereabouts for goals. So, of course, me personally, you know, if I was picking the team, I'd be playing every week. But that's just not the way it works. And, you know, I think now the next 4 weeks is really important for everybody, that, you know, they have good games, good trainings with their clubs, that the attitude is right, the players are motivated and ready to go into the game in 4 weeks against Germany and absolutely throw the kitchen sink at them, because at this stage now we do not have anything to lose. And for me, that will certainly be the case with Cologne. You know, as you said, I've been in good form and I'd like to carry that on as well.
This Germany team are awesome, aren't they?
They are, but beatable.
Thus far, they haven't looked all that beatable. What did you learn about them in so much as you can share with us? What did you learn from that 3-0 defeat earlier on in the campaign?
I suppose, I think one thing that we did, I suppose at halftime, the players were very kind of felt aggrieved about, was, I suppose, the amount of space they were getting on in the centre of the field. And, you know, when you have the likes of Marazan and who's, you know, they're absolutely fantastic players, but I suppose at times we were giving them too much space. These players are excellent in 2-3 metres of space, never mind 5 or 10 metres of space, which we ended up giving them at times. And I think in the second half, you know, it really showed that when we actually stepped a little bit higher, we got a little bit close to them. I think, yes, they had maybe one or two big chances in the second half, but we completely, I think, shut out their threats. And it was more of kind of putting the ball into the box. And then, you know, you have, when you have Louise Quinn in there and Diane Caldwell and Leigh Fahey, you're always very confident that they'll be able to deal with the danger. So it's going to be very interesting over the next few weeks with Germany, because obviously now they've qualified. There's going to be question marks, you know, will they bring, you know, will they bring the full squad, you know, the strong squad? And even like this idea that they might bring second string squad, their second string squad would probably start most international games for other countries as well. So it's going to be difficult. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But I'm very, in a quiet way, quietly confident that anything can happen in football. And I think Friday night shows that.
You mentioned some of their brilliant players. I have to say, every time I watch Ireland, Denise O'Sullivan just jumps out as well. She is incredible.
Absolutely. And when you have somebody like that in your team, you're always very confident that you're going to get chances. And you know, for me, it's not even Denise's, how she, her work rate is something that stands out, of course, but yeah, it's how she gets herself out of small areas surrounded by players by just dropping the shoulder and going, or just, you know, rolling the ball through somebody's legs and getting it on the other side. And you know, I think when you look at Friday, you know, it was a typical Denise performance, very dogged and was winning very good ball and, you know, caused a lot of problems for them and had maybe one or two little chances as well. But I think, you know, if you're looking at the game on Friday, I would have to mention Heather Payne and Megan Connolly. I thought the two of them were excellent. And yeah, I think Heather especially, I think that's the best game I've seen Heather play. And you know, they always say in GAA, when you change your marker, it's always a good sign. And I think Ukraine changed their left back three times over the whole game. So I think that's a good sign for Heather's performance.
Amber, you guys are all in the brutal world of a results business, and so from afar we'll judge this Irish team on whether or not they make the championships. Parking that for a second, do you feel like you're improving as a group under Vera Powell? Do you feel like the Irish team are making progress under Vera Powell?
Well, I think if you look at the group that we've had, I definitely don't think we've had a better opportunity to qualify. Obviously, taking away what might happen in the next few weeks, I think that collectively, you know, there's been good players brought in, and I think players have been given debuts with Jamie Finn and Ellen Molloy most recently, and I think that's, you know, it's really important for the development of the team that you have younger players coming through. And I think for me personally, it looks like it's going to be, you know, it's, at this moment in time, it's going to be difficult to see how the group lays out. As you said, it's solely based on results. And for me, I'm exactly the same. Like, you know, you can play with a really good team and but not win anything, you know, and then you kind of reflect on how good the team actually was. If we manage to get ourselves a playoff out of this, you know, I think it'll be absolutely fantastic. But I think with the work and the effort and the time the players have dedicated to this cause over the last number of years, you know, I think it is just something that we so richly deserve. But unfortunately, Ukraine will be saying exactly the same thing. So we just have to make sure in the next few weeks that we look after ourselves and we're ready to go.
Yeah, like it's a shot to nothing. And as you said, at least the mindset will be absolutely clear. There's no going out and a draw is good enough, or this is good enough, or that's good enough. It's just go out and go for it, which, you know, sometimes in sport is a nice place to be mentally, that you've no option but to go out and win, you know, and it kind of simplifies everything, and hopefully you muster up a big performance. I mean, it's a pity there won't be crowds there to state the obvious as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, even if I think about thinking back to Friday as well, I was actually quite surprised that Ukraine actually started with two holding midfielders, because we had, obviously it was something that we had practiced in video analysis and something we'd seen. But, you know, considering they were the ones that had to get something out of the game, they had to win the game. And when they started with two in front of the back four and then three and a one, you know, I was kind of thinking, you know, they're going to be happy enough just to play out the game to see how they get on and keep themselves in the game for as long as possible and then hopefully try and get at us. So that's, again, as you said, it's something that we're going to have to look to do against the Germans. It's sometimes it's nearly better to be in this position, you know. We are going to be underdogs, there's absolutely no doubt about it. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think that we should be putting this crazy amount of pressure on ourselves. You know, if you're looking at it from afar and a neutral point of view, basing everything off the results, you would say, oh, Germany will have this in the bag, no problems at all.
Yeah.
But that's not going to be the case. And look, we're going to quietly go about our business. We're going to make sure that we're well organised and that everybody's ready to go. And, you know, we always bring up the game against the Netherlands away. I think that's a prime example. And I think the stakes at the time were a lot higher because the Netherlands had just come off the back of winning the Euros. We were away playing in front of 15,000 people. They were expecting, you know, from a conversation with people after the game, that they were expecting to put 4, 5, 6 passes that night. And we were just so disciplined and so organised, and everybody, you know, run themselves into the ground. And it's going to be the same type of performance we're going to need in a few weeks.
How's life in Cologne?
Not too bad. We have a cup game on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that.
You're in very good form. Any reason why?
Well, the coach is playing me, which is a good start. I think I had a very good pre-season there, I must say, if I'm, you know, and I worked very hard. And, you know, I came back after the Germany camp and I had a couple of, it wasn't kind of in great form going into the Germany camp. And then afterwards, I suppose, confidence-wise, and then you come out of it. And I suppose I just kind of had a little conversation with myself and said, look, just keep the head down. Still do your little bit of practice before and after training. And, you know, eventually it will come good. And, you know, thankfully that week it turned for us when we went in and we played a friendly at the weekend and had a very good game that day. And it's amazing with confidence, you know, it takes you, it's so quick to lose it, but it takes you so long to get it back. But, you know, thankfully after a good week, I managed to get it back. And it's just, thankfully, it's managed to keep rolling for me so far.
Yeah, confidence, especially fickle, it seems, when you're responsible for scoring goals, you know, like that extra burden. Do you have a mentor of any kind? Do you talk to pick anyone's brains when it comes to your own game? It sounds like you're, you know, resilient enough to have a conversation with yourself and kind of calm yourself through a mini crisis. Is that generally your approach to those kind of ups and downs?
Yeah, I think, in fairness, I think there's a good few people that I would be able to kind of relay feelings with in terms of, you know, God, geez, I'm not playing well at the minute. And, you know, I've a couple of very good ones here in Cologne who, you know, are can be very critical of me when I need somebody to be critical to me. And then they're also the same, they're the first person, you know, to pat me on the back to say, well done. And for me, I think that's extremely important. And, you know, as you said, as a striker, you always have that little bit of pressure because it's like, well, oh God, if she doesn't score, you know, are we going to win? And I suppose for me, we signed a very good, you know, a very, very good striker this year, Mandy Islacker, who came from Bayern Munich. And, you know, I suppose that she's, you know, she was a big name in German women's football. And I think initially, you know, the pressure kind of fell on her shoulders because she's been scoring goals for so many years that I think the expectation was for her to come in and do the same. And for me, then, there isn't the pressure, then I can just go out and enjoy the game and play it, because I always know that, you know, if I'm playing well and working hard, I always find that I get myself into good positions and then it's just about putting them away.
It's funny, isn't it? So often just going out and enjoying yourself is about 95% of the battle.
Do you know what? I even think it's more. And I think I found that myself over the last couple of weeks. You know, just there was one training session where I honestly just wanted the ground to swallow me up. I was like, I don't want to be here. I have no interest. And I just felt really, really miserable. And then, you know, the next day, then you go in and you have a great training session, you're scoring goals in the small excited games and the big game, and suddenly then you just feel like, you know, God, this is easy for me now. And but then I just think it's you work yourself into those positions, you know. It's not just a matter of you can't just tell yourself, oh, you know, tomorrow's a good day, just, you know, be positive about that, because sometimes it's, you know, these days can go on for a couple of weeks and then you're kind of looking at yourself being like, you know, what's wrong with me and all that. So thankfully now I'm kind of over that little dip that I did have. And but, you know, every player has, and they come all the time. That's the problem with them. You can't keep them away. But for me, it's just about working hard. And as I said, keep doing my practice before and after training. And I find then when you go into the games, the practice that you're doing always comes out.
Yes, they must be lovely moments where you've practiced something yourself, done a few extras on a Wednesday, Thursday, and then just who knows what quirk it is in the world, law of nature or whatever, it seems to happen on a Saturday for you and you think, wow, that's amazing, I was just doing that on the Wednesday.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a basic thing as well, but I even find that even the balls that come in, the low crosses that come in, and you're coming in and you have to tap them into the net, and then you might hit one and it goes over the bar and you're like, oh, geez, you know, God, you know, I need to get this right. And yeah. But then you do something different with your run. Like, that's one thing the coaches here have been telling me quite So yeah, I would get quite excited as soon as I get into the box and the ball's there. I'm like, oh my God, this could, I'm going to score. Where sometimes they're like, just wait, you know, stay cool. And then just, you know, put your foot into it, ease it into the corner, no problem. And I think that's one thing, even over the last 6 weeks, I've really improved in is timing my runs and getting across the right players and getting into the right areas. And, you know, if you do that, as I said to you, the ball just then drops for you in the 6 yard box and you're like, you know, what is this crazy world, you know, and why is it doing it for me today? But you know, the important thing for me is when those days happen, it's all well and good, but don't forget the days that it wasn't happening and just trying to keep yourself, you know, keep yourself motivated and keep getting through. And, you know, the thing is, and I think if you look at Friday, you know, the likes Katie McCabe, you know, a fantastic footballer and has been an absolutely, you know, she's been a credit to herself for years in the Irish jersey and has scored so many penalties for us before, misses one, but that doesn't reflect on her as a person or as a, you know, as a footballer. And I have no doubt that Katie will go now and do something for us in 4 weeks that gets us over the line. And I think that's the important thing. It's not just looking at the bad moments, it's then going and how we react to them. And, you know, myself over the last 4 weeks, I've managed to get myself into the right mentality.
Great. And a last word, I was in Clone a couple of years ago, wandered around the streets, beautiful, and the big cathedral. I don't know, in the midst of this very, very strange year, I was going to say, can you get out and about and experience the city? I dare say you can't. Have you got a feel for Cologne, though, and the culture and the people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I suppose when I experienced the carnival last year, I think after that experience where I don't really know if there's a way to describe it or to compare it to Ireland, because, you know, it's just the most bizarre time of year, and it's something that the whole city immerses itself in. And like you said, it's an absolutely beautiful city. There's fantastic people here. I'm playing with a fantastic club that, you know, they're so dedicated to the football. And, you know, once you put on, you know, the FC Cologne, the hoodie or the jacket, and you're walking the street, people pay attention to you, they look at you, they, you know, they admire you in a way. And, you know, it's for me, I suppose, the whole thing with the GAA and being proud of your community, you know, this for me now is my community, and I am, you know, extremely proud to represent them. And I suppose in a way you can get out and about in the city. The way that Germany have dealt with the coronavirus has been a little bit different to Ireland. Thankfully, a lot of the things are still open, but obviously you have to adhere to the recommendations with the hand washing, the mask. But I just think that's been we've adapted to everyday life here. So it's, as you said, it's a beautiful city and it's great to be here.
How's the German?
It's better. It's much better now. If you had asked me before Christmas, I wouldn't have said it was too great. But it's just amazing how, you know, I do my lessons once a week, and even listening to the coach and just repetitively listening to things, and you adapt to it. So I think my ear would be quite good, and even my reading is quite good, but my speaking probably wouldn't be as good because I just probably don't practice it enough. But the girls can understand me. And when I play, I would speak predominantly through German, unless I'm given out about something, then I have to go back to the English then.
German in a Donegal accent. I'd say that's a new one on them.
Yes, it is. Now I have to slow myself down a little bit sometimes. But even the pronunciation of words that they say, like, it's, this word can be quite similarly spelled, but then the pronunciation is so different, and I just, for me, it just doesn't make any sense at all. But I do have to slow myself down. But to be honest, more so with the English, when I start going on a rant and I start my bringing in wee and while, and then suddenly they lose all track of me then.
Well, listen, thanks for making time for us. I know it's probably the disappointment of Friday still lingering, but there is Germany to come on December 1st, if people are wondering when that game is on. Keep it going in the meantime. Enjoy life out there and keep up the good form. I'm Amber Barrett. Thanks again.
Thanks very much for having me.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.